And I know more, but retain less, retain less, retain less, retain less, 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 less.
Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers, season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, but my battle angel name is Gonzanicus Gravity Well.
My name is Joanna Robinson, but my battle angel name is Joanna : Peace Demon.
And I'm Neil Miller, and my battle angel name is only one name. It's Globe Trotticus. That's for all the. It's the only ball / headband related thing I could come up with. That's cool.
I know that you're like, this is a Harlem Globetrotters joke, but it also makes you sound like you travel a lot, which you do not do that. So that's,
yeah, and also you wouldn't do that in the world of Alita either, apparently. So
yeah, no, you see a whole bunch of nothing, and that just end up right back at Trashtown.
Yeah,
we're talking about Alita Battle Angel, the new Robert Rodriguez, James Cameron produced anime manga based movie. I'm going to say both, because it is, I guess, based on both. And then, you know, we'll have a bonus segment for our Maester and Small Council Patreon subscribers at patreon.com/stormofspoilers, where we will sweep up some last bits of Oscar news before this weekend's broadcast, which is, you know, going to involve all the nominees now, so that's at least one thing that we get to talk about. Also, this is your weekly reminder that Con of Thrones is coming up July 12th through 14th in Nashville. Tickets are on sale now. If you get tickets, you enter code STORM at checkout. It gets you $5 off. We're officially going to be there. Jamie Lannister is going to be there.
Samuel
Tarly is going to be there. He's going to be, you know, fresh off the last shot of the finale where he shuts a book and it's called A Song of Ice and Fire. He's going to come right to Con of Thrones. That's my business before we get into crazy anime CGI-ness. Joanna, do we have any reviews?
Oh, Sam. That's my Elijah Wood impression. Okay. We do. We have several reviews. Thank you guys so much. One of them is asking for a Steel Magnolias accent. I know that's a request for Neil, so I'm going to save it for Neil. So who, if you missed that episode, I don't remember which one it was on, but Neil, we found out that Neil both knows all the lines from the film Steel Magnolias and can do an incredible, Julia Roberts Sheldon accent. Okay.
I would do it again, but I'll save it for this review at a later date.
Yeah, please do. All right. This person comes from Obi-Shan Kenobi. You want answers? I want the spoilers. 5 stars. All right. You can't handle the spoilers, son. We live in a world that has podcasts, and those podcasts have to be hosted by people with opinion. Who's going to do it? You Patreon subscriber? Joanna, Neil, and Dave have a greater responsibility than you could possibly fathom. You weep for Sir Pounce, and you curse the Kingsguard. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know, that Sir Pounce's death, while tragic, probably saved lives. And knowing about these spoilers, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the spoilers because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want these hosts on this podcast. You need these hosts on this podcast. They use words like pew, pew, CGI. These hosts use words as the backbone of a life spent explaining something. You use them as a punchline. I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a listener who rises and sleeps listening to the very speculation that Joanna, Neil, and Dave provide and then question the manner in which they provide it. I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way. Otherwise, I suggest you pick up a mic and start your own podcast. Either way, I don't give a damn what you think you're entitled to. Fuck. I really fucked the landing on that one. Anyway.
that was such a roller coaster.
Thank you that. A few good reviews. Mentions. I don't know. Thank you.
A few good stars. Yes. All 5 stars. yeah. Oh, man. Now I want to go watch that movie.
I know. So good.
Like Jack Nicholson, who's really cooking. Anyway, yes.
I mean, I think I was very much cooking as well. So I wasn't. All right. Anyway.
But excellent. Neil.
Yes.
Guess what time it is?
Ooh, fun. It's time to go storm chasing.
Pew, 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 pew.
And those pew, pew, pews signify that it's time to talk about one pop culture storm that you're chasing this week. It could be a movie, a book, a show, a story, a podcast. Mine is actually a secondhand story from my roommate, Theo, who people who follow this podcast for a long time will remember. He's replaced Joanna for some bro downs. But he went to see the movie The Lords of Chaos, which is this new movie about Norwegian death metal, I believe. It has a Culkin in it. I believe it's a Rory Culkin.
That sounds like a Rory project.
Yep, it's a Rory Culkin and an Emery Cohen jam.
Oh, Emery Cohen.
So it's a horror movie about a teenager who tries to start a Norwegian black metal band in the early 90s. I am told that it's very violent, so I'm probably not going to see it, but I did want to pass along Theo's thoughts because he put it in a way that I feel is relevant to our interests. He described this film as, it's a film about the skids from Letterkenny if they went way too far with, like, all of it. So I found that to be pretty apt. It's also related to the other storm that I'm chasing. For those who are fans of Letterkenny, as we are in this house. The Valentine's Day episode, the Valentine's Day episode called Valentine's Day is now on Hulu and you can watch it.
Is that a Teen Girl Squad shout out from Letterkenny?
Think so. It's just the way Derry says it.
Attaboy, Derry.
And I don't have any details from the Valentine's Day episode to share. I will say this, it's the horniest damn thing I've ever seen on a television show. Like, it's Letterkenny has a really good knack for finding the joke and just really going somewhere that you didn't see it going. And this one is another great example. So I would recommend, if you're of the Letterkenny persuasion, do that. If you like Letterkenny and horror, apparently there's a little bit of Lords of Chaos for you. So that's what I'm chasing this week. Joanna, I believe you're chasing something that is probably popular with our people.
It's
the Storm
true.
Of Spoilers people.
It's true. Our listeners wanted a full episode on this, some of them anyway, in our Patreon Slack. We cannot provide because I am the only one of the three of us who has seen it, but I have seen every episode of Netflix's The Umbrella Academy, so I figured I should at least talk about it. I think the last time I talked about it on a storm chasing segment, I was a little higher on it because I had only seen a couple episodes, and then I saw more. It's like that constant Netflix thing where there's just like a sag in the middle, right?
Yes,
is how I feel about it.
This all feels very familiar.
And then I liked the ending where Ellen Page, like, you find out really why Ellen Page was cast in this role, and so that's, you know, she gets a lot to do in the end, which is really nice. But I feel like you know, a lot of our listeners are pretty into it. I'm pretty hard mixed on it. You know, so this is based off a comic book by the lead singer of My Chemical Romance, Gerard Way, and Gabriel Bá, who's a great illustrator. And it's sort of like Ellen Page, when I interviewed her about this, described it, I think, as like Wes Anderson meets the X-Men, except I don't think she said X-Men because she was like trying to avoid talking about the X-Men at all, because that was the day that the Bryan Singer Atlantic article came out. Anyway, that was sort of Wes Anderson, or what's the name of the guy who did Harold and Maude?
Hal Ashby.
Yeah, Hal Ashby. Yeah. So that sort of vibe, right? And
it's superheroes with a Hal Ashby spin.
and if you go in looking for the Wes Andersonian stuff, it's pretty easy to see, like, there's, you know, basically a group of super bad kids around the world, all born at the same time. We don't know why. They all have different superpowers. And this one weird eccentric guy who turns out to be an alien. I don't think that's a spoiler. Collects them all and not all of them, but collects as many as he can to raise them. And they all have, like, as I said, different powers. So they're all adopted, my adopted daughter, Margot Tannenbaum, but raised together. So the fact that, like, two of them have a crush on each other is very, like, Richie Margot Tannenbaum. There's even, like, scenes of them in a tent together, like a makeshift tent that they've made together up in, the, like, a playroom somewhere. So that's very Margot Richie Tannenbaum, that they go in as children and revisit as adults. There's a kid, one of the kids who has powers, has the ability to jump through space and time. That's number five. They're all numbered, number four, number three, number five. Number five jumps through time, played by Aidan Gallagher. He is very Rushmore. He's in his little, like, uniformed suit. He's a adult man in a little boy's body. It's very, very Jason Schwartzman in Rushmore. So, like, all that stuff is there. Things I like. Aidan Gallagher as the boy, great. Cameron Britton, who was, I can't remember. Mindhunter. Thank you, Mindhunter. I just thanked myself for remembering something. He played a serial killer in Mindhunter last year, and he was so good in that. And he's really good as one of the, like, these time-traveling hitmen. So Aidan Gallagher is the kid. And then Robert Sheehan, who a lot of people know from Misfits as Klaus, who's one of the siblings who can see dead people, basically. And so self-medicates in order to not see them all the time. So he's like this sort of low-sh drug addict thing. Things that are less good, Tom Hopper, who is a very attractive young man, as we've, I think, talked about very recently on this podcast, from Game of Thrones and Black Sails, is under a lot of padding. His beautiful muscly arms are hidden, and that is a crime against arms. I don't like it. And there's just, like, a lot of other stuff that I don't, it's a lot of style and not enough substance, and not enough things feel like quite written or thought through.
Dickon! That's where I remember that guy from. Honestly, it's been bothering me.
Okay,
I keep seeing, like, the promo photos, and I was like, I know that face. Where's that face from?
New Dickon is who it is. Anyway, so all that's to say, I didn't love it, but I liked it. The action, there's a lot of fight sequences with music, fun pop music, which I guess you get access to if you're Gerard Way, lead singer of My Chemical Romance. And so, that's fun. Like, all the stylish fight scenes are really fun. But, overall, I don't give it a ringing endorsement, because it's not what? Character based. So, there you go. That's
That's fair. It does sound like something I would be interested in watching a few episodes of, but I don't know if there's a small subsegment of our listenership that's not going to let me get away with watching something like that before Black Sails. So that's where I'm at with that one. Dave, save me by telling me all about your storm chasing.
Yes. Well, thanks to a well-placed tweet of a little section, I was reminded that new Mickey Mouse shorts actually exist. They have existed since 2013. They're being produced by Paul Ruddish, who is a Cartoon Network creator.
I'm sorry, his name is Paul Ruddish. It's like a little bit Paul Ruddy.
Paul Rudish.
He seems like he'd be awesome to hang out with some of the time instead of Paul Rudd, who would be awesome all the time.
I'm not making fun of how you're saying this guy's name. I've never heard of him. I just thought it sounded funny.
It's funny.
Please go ahead.
I also don't know if I pronounced it correctly, but let's go with that. Anyway, they've taken all the Disney properties that are essentially Mickey Mouse. You know, Minnie's there, Donald's there, Goofy's there, Peg-Laid Pete is there. They get to, you know, reference different Disney movies. But they're all sort of animated in a style I would say is closer to something like, Ren and Stimpy when we were growing up, than something that I would say is a Disney style. So I was very pleased to learn that they've continued releasing seasons since 2013. So they're now up to a whopping 82 episodes that they'll occasionally show on the Disney Channel. Or more importantly, they've uploaded to an official Mickey Mouse YouTube channel, and they're all amazing. They're like 2 to 3 minutes. But just in terms of taking a classic character that you think you know how he moves because you've watched, you know, your Mickey's Christmas Carols or your 1940s originals, whatever, or even if you just watch Fantasia, you have an idea in your head of how these classic Disney characters move and interact with the world. And these shorts sort of throw all that out the window in a way that initially is kind of shocking, because Disney's so close to most of its properties and protective of them, to see them, you know, suddenly be something else. But once you settle into the rhythm of the characterization of, like, I think this new Mickey, I think it would really be enjoyable for children of all ages. I introduced a three-year-old, three-and-a-half-year-old, she'd be very mad if I left that part out, to a couple of... a couple of them this weekend, and she enjoyed them as much as I did.
Does she
from like an animation standpoint?
Does she listen to this podcast?
No, but maybe her parents will. You never know when you're going to be told on to a child. Sure. That's one of the things people love to just tell on you to children. I think that goes anyway. But anyway, Mickey Mouse, look it up on YouTube. I think Once Upon a Wish would be one I would start with. That's the one who's got clipped on Twitter and made me repay attention and watch some 80 shorts over the week. It's worth it, though.
You guys know what else I've been watching, actually, in addition to Umbrella Academy? I watched all 8 episodes of Discovery of Witches, which is adapted from the Deborah Harkness bestselling All Souls trilogy. Modern day love story set in a world where witches, vampires, and demons secretly live and work alongside humans hidden in plain sight. It stars Teresa Palmer, who you may know from Hacksaw Ridge, or what's that zombie one that she was in?
Warm something.
Yeah, we like her. And Matthew Good, great. Who is a big favorite with Storm of Spoilers listeners. We love Matthew Good of Downton Abbey and Watchmen and The Good Wife and The Crown and all other things fame. Season 1, 8 episodes of which launched exclusively on Shudder and Sundance Now on January 17th, 2019. Seasons 2 and 3 have already been greenlit because, you guys, this was one of the most popular shows in the UK in like all of history, and the US is also really enjoying it. So Discovery of Witches, it's a hit.
All right, well, that's pretty interesting. Let's talk about where people can watch this very fantastic sounding show. First place is Shudder. Shudder is a premium streaming video service that's super serving fans of all degrees with the best selection of horror and thrillers. Shudder has the largest, fastest-growing, human-curated selection of thrilling and dangerous entertainment. Love that human element.
You can also see it on Sundance Now. It is built on the Sundance legacy and curated by acclaimed filmmakers and cultural icons. Sundance Now is proud to present an extensive array of entertainment for a passionate and intellectually curious audience. Sundance Now offers original and exclusive dramas, comedies, and true crime series. Ooh, true crime series. In addition to award-winning movies from every genre, including foreign language and documentary features, all streaming commercial-free.
Okay, so I watched, as I said, all of Discovery of Witches, mostly because of my, like, unabiding love for Matthew Good, who has always been good to great in everything he's ever done, but, like, he plays a vampire in this, and that is just, you're like, you watch him, and you're like, I've been waiting for you to play a vampire. You know, pertinent to Neil's interests, Owen Teal, aka Alistair Thorne, is a major, major player.
Does he have a fun accent?
He does. He's a high-ranking witch. Yeah.
Excellent.
Owen Teal doing magic. Alex Kingston, who Doctor Who fans will know as River Songs, or ER fans will know as, I don't know, Dr. Green's wife at some point, is there. She's also a witch. And Lindsay Duncan, who Doctor Who fans or British stage fans might also know, is there.
Oh, so it's very British, eh?
It's very European. I mean, I love my accents and my magic and my time traveling. And this is something that I want to say. So season 1, you know, is available to watch now. You can watch it now. But season 2 is when we get into some like really fun, cool, weird time travel stuff. And if you guys listen to this podcast recently, you know I love a time travel show. So time travel is coming. Right now we got some witchy vampire romance stuff going on. And that is a Discovery of Witches. So
Head over to discoveryofwitchestv.com and use promo code STORM for a free 30-day trial of either Shudder or Sundance Now. That's discoveryofwitchestv.com, promo code STORM. And we're back to the future with Alita Battle Angel. This has been a long gestating project. James Cameron wanted to adapt this anime based off of a manga in the early 90s. Please stop me if at any time the history that you've read, Mike, dear co-hosts, is different from what I said. I'm just trying to put it together. So there's this manga that was written from 90 to 95 that comprises a whole bunch of volumes that was then condensed into an anime of two episodes, and together they make like about a movie length feature. This is also in the early 90s, and that is just titled Battle Angel, and that is the one that has more parallels, I think, than the manga to the movie we actually saw. But what happened is James Cameron took that anime story and James Cameron'd all over it. At first it looked like James Cameron was going to direct it, but actually it ended up being Robert Rodriguez, who has been stuck in either a very good place of constantly collaborating with other people or a very stagnating place of constantly collaborating with other people, depending on how you view Robert Rodriguez's particular set of talents. I think we're going to try to stay somewhat spoiler-free, but I have a feeling as we start doing things like taking Neil off the chain and letting him say whatever he wants, it's going to start sliding into iffy territory. So let's try...
I have a thing that I would like to say about Robert Rodriguez first that's unrelated to Atlanta, first. If you would
okay.
Like.
Sure, yeah.
I've always really admired Robert Rodriguez in a very specific way that he is, you know, he's always really embraced the sort of like DIY rebel filmmaker, I've sort of built myself up sort of thing. And he really sort of lives that. His studio is here in Austin.
Would you call him like a troublemaker?
He's been a disruptor, a troublemaker. But he's also somebody who created his own studio, employs a lot of people, makes a lot of movies that, you know, maybe studios wouldn't have let him make otherwise because of the resources that he has. And I think that's really cool. And I got a lot of respect for that. Okay, now we can talk about Alita.
Okay. I'm going to co-sign everything Neil said.
I was going to say, I'm like really surprised that Neil, who lives in Austin and is part of the Austin film community, is about to like speak so negatively on a Robert Rodriguez project. Because I feel like... He's a really nice fella, and I've been to Troublemaker, and it's a very nice place, and I like the way he supports South by Southwest.
Oh man, we were at that party in Iron City, which is in this movie.
But like, I feel like he kind of runs Austin, so like you speaking out is like, you know, it's something.
Well, I'm not, I mean.
He's like the Ed Norton of Austin, if you know what I mean, and you do.
Here's what's about to happen.
All the way the end of Alita Battle Angel.
Here's what's about to happen. We're about to talk about this Alita Battle Angel movie, and I want you to keep this in mind, dear listener. Nothing I will say about this movie is false. So, you know. There's that. Mm. I'm only going to speak on the truth of what's in the movie, and then my interpretation of what that means, which could
so
be
in order, to keep this somewhat on the rails, let's go in the order in which we saw the movie, which starts with Joanna Robinson.
It's true. I saw it a couple weeks ago with our friendly, you know, producer assistant Slack mod Diana, who also happens to live with me. And yeah, we went to go see a screening, a very early screening, and it was followed by a Q&A, you know, a quote unquote live Q&A that was not live at all with, James Cameron, John Landau, who is, you know, one of his frequent producers and partners, Robert Rodriguez, Jennifer Connelly, Christoph Waltz, and Rosa Salazar, who plays the titular Battle Angel. And I, like, didn't really like the movie at all watching it. But could see good parts. And then I watched this Q&A and I got like actively angry about it. So, because according to Robert Rodriguez and James Cameron and John Landau, like they've made this very elegant allegory about female puberty, and that just really, really, really pissed me off.
Yeah. They didn't say that.
they said it. Oh, I missed it. Multiple times.
Oh, God.
Multiple times. And I was like, oh, if that's, if that's what the fuck you thought this was, like, if you were just making...
Wait, don't all women walk into the mountains to a river and discover their new body in a downed spaceship?
There's also a close-up zoom-in shot on some growing robot boobs. So, like, this movie has not a single...
Follow with the line, she wasn't as young as you thought she was.
Yeah, this movie has not a single leg to stand on when it comes to, like, quote-unquote girl power or whatever the fuck it's pretending to be. I don't agree with some people. Some people on Twitter have gone in this, like, extreme, like, James Cameron has never, written a good female character, whatever. Here's what I think is the deal with... Diana just Slack messaged me because she wants me to talk about the katana sword. Diana, do you want to come talk about the katana sword? No, you have to come up here and talk into the mic. This is gonna go in the podcast. Oh, sure. She's too busy working, but not too busy to Slack me about katana swords. Wait, she's coming. All right.
Too busy working.
Right. What, you've never picked up a secret Martian katana before?
Okay, at one point, there's like a... I am downstairs trying to work right now, but I heard Joanna talking about this, and it's true, as soon as you said James Cameron, and the other guys who worked on the movie kind of sitting around in a table, just like, talking about how they made a beautiful allegory for female puberty, I just felt like steam shoot out of my ears, basically. Up until then, it was just... It's an anime. And if you like animes, it's going to be so much fun. I mean, at one point, she cries a tear and then cuts it in half with a katana.
Oh, yeah.
And if that's not the most, like, Japanese thing I've ever seen in my entire life, I don't know. There's lots of nice little touches like that.
Yeah.
Including her huge eyes, because... I don't know if you
want
to talk about anything.
Yeah. The other thing that, so that was Diana. Thank you, Diana. No, we will not be editing that out. The other thing that, Diana brought up, I think it's, you'll find it on TVTropes.com, this, idea of Born Sexy Yesterday. or what I like to call Sexy Murder Baby. You will be familiar with it from the film Sucker Punch. Anyway, this is definitely a Sexy Murder Baby movie, and it really, really pisses me off. So I hated a lot of this movie, and I hated it even more after I heard, these guys talk about what the movie they thought they made. Here are some things I liked. I liked Christoph Waltz, actually. I liked Jennifer Connelly. The Oscar winners showed up to do some pretty good work. Mahershala Ali as well. All three of the Oscar winners showed up and were like, you know what? We have Oscars for a reason. We're better than this movie, but we're just gonna do it anyway. And then I liked, we talked a lot about Afrofuturism when we talked about Black Panther. What you see in Alita Battle Angel is like Latino futurism, because Robert Rodriguez directed this and they filmed it in Latin America somewhere. And then they added like a bunch of like, Mesoamerican touches. Like Ed Skrein plays this, cyborg robot assassin figure, and he's got this like beautiful intricate design on his back that looks like, you know, like a Mayan calendar. Like it's incredible looking, and so that stuff is cool. It's very cool because you don't often see it. You don't see the architecture and the design, like the design of her her first body, which has like these very intricate, like beautiful pattern designs on it. Like that's really cool looking, and it's just not something you see. And so I really liked that aspect of it. And then I heard these guys talk about the movie and I just got really mad. So, the thing I was going to say about James Cameron and women is that, I don't agree that James Cameron has never given us anything like good around women in cinema. But what I think is true is that when James Cameron started making films in the 80s and 90s, we never saw women in these like lead action roles. And so, you know, he didn't invent Ripley, but he picked up Ripley and made her, you know, harder, stronger, faster. He made Sarah Connor sort of soft and then harder, stronger, faster. Like this is a thing that he did. And what he did basically is I think he created these women who were like basically men, that he created these female roles that are male characters. You see that a lot when men try to do, quote unquote, my least favorite phrase, strong female characters, is they just take like a woman and make her a man. And that's not the same as creating like a really interesting, cool, nuanced female character. It's just like sort of slapping. It's like what the Renaissance sculptors used to do, which is slap some oranges on a sculpture of a man. Cause you're like, that's a man with some like two round things on his like pectorals. And otherwise that's a dude. So like, but that was useful because it hadn't been what he did with Sarah Connor, with Ellen Ripley, like that hadn't been done. And so it was revolutionary and cool and useful. But I think at this point, James Cameron's take on women is no longer used. We have progressed past that. And so now what I feel like he presents is very retro. And especially this concept of like, I'm trying to do, female puberty. I should mention one last thing before I hand off to, y'all is that this movie does have a female co-author on it, though she has not done like any press around it. So, but I think it's fair if I'm going to like kick dirt on these guys who are trying to do this, they at least, you know, quasi protected themselves by hiring one woman to work on the project. At least her name's, Leda Kalogridis, and she worked on, Terminator Genesis and Altered Carbon and Birds of Prey, all of which are like pretty reviled sci-fi properties. So, you know, not our best, but she's an Austin-based person, so like maybe, you know, she knows Robert or something like that. But anyway, it's not like the joke I was making when I walked out was like, ask a single woman. Well, they did. I mean, they asked a single woman. They just asked a woman that I don't think has, I don't know, great things to say. So there you go.
Interesting. Neil, you saw it today, right?
Yeah, I did.
All right, so I'm next.
You saw it next.
Yeah. I'm not offended by this mistake of a movie. It is very well executed, but like I think Speed Racer or Tron Legacy before it like doesn't have a reason really to exist outside of occasionally looking cool. And I'm not sure they... you're right about not only James Cameron's, I think, portrayal of women, but like his idea of what a blockbuster is locked into the early 80s. And so his like weird idea of storytelling without a ton of connective tissue sometimes works. But that's why like a lot of his really good movies or action movies are sequels is because he's not good at like effortless world building. Alita is either not telling you enough or over explaining things that it has no reason to tell you about. And the original, anime was Alita was a lot more like Pinocchio, like through her trying to discover herself, we discovered the other characters. This one decides it's going to focus on Alita and make some changes, like she has to discover her own body, like they put things in a weird order so she's in the motorball game and trying to save Ego or Yu-Gi-Oh, whatever his name is.
I think it's just Hugo.
Hugo. Yeah, that's right.
He's Yu-Gi-Oh, got the most normal name in this stupid movie.
Just Hugo, but I think it's spelled with a Y. Anyway, not important. It's a mess, and because it tries to adapt a ton of this anime into something that looks like a Western movie, it has cognitive dissonance throughout. For me, when I heard Joanna's reactions before seeing the movie, because I heard some of them, I was expecting, like, at least somebody to talk about fucking this robot, because that, you know, seemed like it was gonna happen. This movie is very into nobody talking about fucking the robot, so much so that in this gigantic world-building cyborg thing, like, nobody's talking about fucking robots. It seems like off that we are living in a world of Motorball and bounty hunters.
I have a theory.
Okay. Good point. Anyway, and just when you think that this movie is going to stop and focus down on something like, you know, she's going to become a bounty hunter or she's going to play motorball, it weaves into the other plot for like another 20 minutes and ends up feeling like completely long and, I don't know, like the middle Hobbit movie, maybe?
Oof.
I don't know. It's just everything I want to compare this to are movies that look good on a technical level and are definitely made by people who know what they are doing, but just don't have an actual reason to exist. Like, this movie isn't about anything. I wish it was about female puberty because, like, I don't know. It's confusing to me that they would say that because there isn't a lot in this movie to me that reads like her actually maturing. She has, like, literal flashes that fill in story for us.
She gets That's an not how older life body. Works. Her body's older. Her boobs are bigger now.
I mean, the anime, I don't think, even had the two-body thing. I think that's left over from the manga. Anyway, it's just a weird collection of, like, a really interesting, like, 90s, like, punk comic, like, full of ideas. Like, you'd see all the things that we thought were cool in the early 90s here. They play, like, this weird extreme sport. You know, the rich people, like, hover above us. Everybody gets cyborg add-ons that make no sense biologically or towards, like, physics. There's a weird martial art that has a dumb name that everybody knows about except for the audience.
Oh, there's- yeah! Sorry, I just remembered that part. Okay, go ahead.
There's so funny. A bunch of things that are things that I loved about finding, like, a niche anime movie in the 90s that, you know, there'd be like three other people that understood what was going on and you all got to see these like grotesque designs and whatnot, you know, play out a weird future story. But if you just like one-to-one adapt it, it's not a good blockbuster, says me in the box office now, but we're gonna have to see what happens when it opens in Asia because we could get Pacific Rimmed on this one, I think.
Panzer Kunst. And get a sequel.
Panzer Kunst.
So stupid. Yeah, I think it did do kind of well globally, but not super well domestically. All right.
Yeah. Neil. Well, and like no Chinese audience yet. It hasn't even opened yet, so still might get a sequel. Maybe, but maybe Neil Miller is about to kill it in its tracks.
Neil Mills. Neely Mills. What do you got to say?
Neil Mills. Globetrotticus.
It's interesting that you brought up this movie's reason to exist, because I think I understand why it exists.
Oh, yes.
Until recently, I was a white male, age 18 to 35. 35 being the operative recently. But today was the day that I learned that I am no longer in that demographic. Because here's who this movie's for. This movie is saying to young men, hey, wouldn't it be cool
to fuck
if you
a baby?
Could live? No, hold on. If you could live in a cool, futuristic hellscape, a little Mad Maxy, and that you could be struggling in the lower class of society, as you probably are, because that's how most of us are. Wouldn't it be great if you could find a pretty face lying in a scrap heap, have her put together, have her come back with no memory or personality, and then
except
meet her.
The Panzer Kunst.
Yeah, and then meet her, I guess, and then say to yourself, I could fuck this robot. And that's the world that it's presenting. And I think that it's a really bad message for, like, young men. And this makes me feel very old to say, but I did say it about Twilight, and that was, like, 10 years ago. I tried to defend young women that Twilight was giving them a bad message. This movie has a similarly bad message, where it's like, if you're the loner, if you're the rebel, if you don't connect well with other humans, maybe someday there'll be a world in which they'll just be pretty robots all over the place. And they will immediately be charmed by you because they won't know anything and you won't have to get to learn anything about their personalities and you won't have to spend any time doing any work. You can just look like Robert Rodriguez and have a big, sweaty love affair with a robot. And I think it's really gross and I was really mad about it. And I don't understand why the lead, the love interest, the lead guy, Hugo, why does he dress like Robert Rodriguez? What's going on here? Like, what are we trying to accomplish here, boys? Things I liked. The part where James Cameron did some rollerball with Terminators, and they spent a bunch of money on it. That looks very cool. But the whole rest of this movie really bothered me in a way that I have not been bothered by a movie before. I don't understand why we're doing this as a society, where we're like, man, you know, if we can't talk to other humans, let's just think about fucking robots. It bothers me. And this movie is like that the whole way for like what feels like 3 hours. And it feels so like three long. Different movies. And, you know, and I thought that it could at the beginning, I wanted to give it a chance because I had heard Joanna's bits and pieces of your take on it before seeing it. And I also had heard from a bunch of people that it was a very technically impressive film. And I'm like, okay, that's usually sort of an interesting sweet spot for me. Problematic, but technically impressive. Great, let's do this. And for a little while in this movie, I thought, okay, maybe this isn't that bad. You know, she gets found. It's the story about this doctor who lost his daughter. And he's trying to replace that hole in his heart, and he's going to rebuild this lost girl. But then it turns into like this thing where she's got to like get a boyfriend, and then she grows her own curves, I guess is the safest way to say that. And then it turns into a big like battle chase movie, and a lot of stuff gets sort of shuffled around, and it is technically impressive, but. Like I said, I really just didn't like the message of it. And what's, I guess, equally frustrating is that, like, Rosa Salazar, who plays Alita, very charming. I'm sure she's delightful. She is probably, I guess, a former dancer because she does a lot of very yoga-y things.
No, you don't think that's, I mean, yes, I mean, that she, is definitely but the actress for the who's action doing stuff.
What? She didn't do a lot of stunts. I thought they told us that last year.
The beauty of performance. I mean, I'm sure she did some stunts, but like the, you think that her standing like her up on her finger is
fine?
Real?
No.
Oh no, no. I like her performance
is
a lot.
Fine. So it's like her performance is fine. Most of the performances in the movie are fine. Like Joanna said, there are some like really talented people doing some good stuff in this, but it's so fucking dumb.
It's really dumb. Rosa Salazar is an actress who I really like. I saw her in the South by film a couple years ago with Adam Pally called Night Owls, what I want to say it was called. I like her. She's got this weird energy to her. I'm like a fan of Rosa Salazar.
But it's this whole, like, the whole rest of this where it's like this weird fantasy for like dudes who can't talk to women. I don't like
it. Yeah, yeah. She's also in Dave's favorite franchise, The Maze Runner. And then I first knew her as Coffee Cart Girl on the TV show Parenthood. That's when I first knew Rosa Salazar. Okay. But anyway, I guess she was in Bird Box, but since I refused to watch that, I have no thoughts on Rosa Salazar and Bird Box. But Rosa Salazar deserves better than this. And what I will say is that, you know, in addition to this dumb round table, fucking John Landau and all these other guys who I just want to tell them to shut up, they also showed us some cool behind the scenes stuff. And like, what is cool is that they mo-capped her facial performance, like on the day, you know, so she's like there and they've got the dots. She's got this huge rig on her and she's got the dots on her face and stuff like that. So they like, but what it feels like to me then is like, here's one of my main frustrations with this. She did not need to look like this. Actually, they could have just used Rosa Salazar. To be honest with you, because like, you know, what they're trying to do is super photorealistic motion capture, but like, let's just imagine that they use Rosa Salazar's face on this robot body as they do with like, not in the same dumb way they do Ed Skrein and like Isaac Gonzalez and stuff like that, because they look kind of weird, but like, you know, she at least would have her neck, so it wouldn't look so weird, like face sort of pasted on something, but like, just use the fucking actress. You don't need to, like, why did we make her look like this? And I get it. It's an anime. It's a manga. Like, I get it. But, like, you don't need to do that. And there's this one side-by-side that I've seen floating around of, like, there's a shot of her eating a chocolate bar and then, like, Alita eating a chocolate bar. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know you saw this because I'm mad at this.
Okay, Dave will have, like, polygon reasons to be mad at this, but my reason to be mad at it is, like, she's making kind of a slightly dumb face, as, like, all of us do when we bite into an enormous bar of chocolate, and they made her look like she's making this sexy blowjob face instead. And, like, that's what really bothers me, is they, like, basically face-tuned this already beautiful actress to make her, like, at all times sexier and cuter and, like, babier than this actual woman is. And that really bothers me. Dave, why does it bother you for polygon reasons?
Oh, I mean, I wouldn't have said sexy blowjob face, but every time you're doing something like tracking the lips but deciding not to use it, it's an indication that you're losing performance from everywhere. Like, if you're not tracking the lips correctly, you're deciding to change that, then just don't motion capture, animate the fucking face. It's a bad decision, not only for that to be out there as part of the press materials, but, like, for it to be as, like, part of the focus is look how close we are to let one of those shots through, because it tips your hands. It's all bullshit. You showed us three shots that lined up pretty close to the performance it was. If you're not lining up the lips, then I have no proof that you're not making up the performance completely. It's just such a weird thing, especially for somebody who's been such a champion of the technology as James Cameron, to make character animation decisions that are, let's lose performance information. Instead of, how can we mold this performance information into something usable, like everybody would do with, like, a film actor, why just be like, no, let's delete that extra mouth information. It's not extra mouth information. You deleted part of the performance. Andy Serkis would yell at you.
Right, because, like, I'm looking at the gif of it right now, and, like, she's making kind of a dumb face when she does it, but it's, like, a very human face. I mean, she also just,
well, it's, like, the first time she's tried chocolate. Yeah. It's her favorite thing. It works. The performance is really good. Yeah. Why are you fucking with it?
Yeah, and instead they just, like, you know, open her mouth wider as she inserts this thing into her mouth, which is why I'm calling it a blowjob face. So, like, you know, it's just, like, it's deeply problematic all the way down to the bone as far as I'm concerned. And, like, I don't, if you go into it and you're like, this is just dumb fun and visual eye candy, I don't know that I can blame you. Like, if you're just going to this film and just taking it on pure surface,
it's an escape.
I really
from a world where women talk back to you.
I have
thoughts of their own.
Well, I mean, I think the whole message of the movie is supposed to be Alita gets to have her own thoughts, but it's not consistent.
I guess,
because, like,
there's also a moment in the movie where I think I almost thought it was going to be about her just tracking down someone who is killing women in the city, and I was like, man, if that's this whole movie is just that, oh, okay, that's better.
Yeah,
but it wasn't at all.
It could have been that, because this and the manga story goes on for, like, forever, and we've only done, like, a chunk of it. This reads like an adaptation of the anime, specifically with stuff like Jennifer Connelly's character doesn't exist in the manga, but does exist in the anime. In the manga, he's named Alita after the doctor's cat. There is no, like, dead child. So, like, already somebody tried to make this, like, palatable. And if you're a fan of Battle Angel, the 90s animated movie, then you're gonna be surprised how, like, accurate this is. Right up to, like, crazy bullshit, like, characters saying exactly what they feel with no subtext, like an anime movie, or suddenly changing how they feel about something. I think there's literally a point where Jennifer Connelly's character motivation pivots because she overhears something when she's somewhere she absolutely shouldn't be plot-wise. And, like, that sort of stuff happens in anime all the time. We let it go because it's not held to, like, the art form standard that we hold huge, gigantic blockbuster movies. If you're into something that dumb, I don't think what James Cameron and Robert Rodriguez did made the original themes of Alita any grosser than they were in early 90s male-dominated animation. That being said, they didn't make it any better either, which I think is what we were all hoping for, or at least pick a story of the thousand stories that Battle Angel tells. Like, this part of this movie just suddenly cuts to the moon and another character.
Okay, all right, this brings me to something important I wanted to discuss, which is versions of this movie that I would watch. Okay. I have a list. Do we need to take a break? Should we do a break and then do this?
Do we want to do like a storm section? What do we think?
Okay, so after this, not only is Neil going to do parts of the movies that worked, but we could talk about the end of the movie, including some cameos, which is what everybody's talking about.
Oh, are they cameos? Oh, okay. All right. All right, this is the part of the show where we thank our lovely Small Council members. I want to thank newcomers of the Small Council, Lawrence Aggleton, Jeff Ziegler, Connor Mufish, maybe? Mufik? Mufik, let's say. Amy H., Kate Dunn. Like, I just started that with such confidence, then I lost it. All right. Mufik. Oh, no. Kate Dilligan, Stacey Taxon, Debbie Denise, or Denise, I fucked that one up too, probably. Ruby Durham, Tanya Shrum, and Dennis Ramirez. Thank you guys so much.
And here's a list of people whose names I am going to butcher this week. Thank you very much to Crystal Kirk, Josh Froschheiser, Rebels Rebels, Alyssa Scott, Ellen Rabin, Corey Hume, Ryan Allwood, Quang Yu Liu, yes, Lena Winter, and Jual.
I'm kind of thinking of making that, my text tone.
And I would like to thank, on behalf of the podcast, Liz Major, Brian Morawski, Randy Blash, Craig Esther, Jessica Lair, Brittany Whimsy Riot, Sam Cohen, Sean, Josh Brown, Kate Whitney, and Amber Vickers. Thank you guys so much. Your donations make the show possible. All right, we're in it now. We're in the spoiler section now.
Wait, so was like Ed Norton a surprise?
Yes,
we did. You did say that in the last segment, though.
Oh, I just kind of thought he was in the movie.
Well, you see him at another point in the movie, but he doesn't take his goggles off.
No, I know. I know that you like barely see him. And then I was like, oh, it was Ed Norton. Okay. Oh, they want a sequel. Like that's how I felt about it. I didn't know it was like a big, ooh, it's Ed Norton.
So here are the three characters, that are planted for an Alita 2. Ed Norton as Nova, Michelle Rodriguez as Gelda, that's the other battle angel that's leading Alita around in her flashbacks, and Jai Courtney as Jashugan, the motorball champion, because she's going to have to play motorball.
So stupid.
Great.
Really quickly, before we get to Neil's alternate versions, can I just say something that I said maybe out loud in our theater, but definitely like very loudly in my own head, which is this. When Hugo's fucking climbing his ass up that tube after they built him a whole robot body, I was like, Jennifer Connelly did not die, get her eyeballs put in a box to save you just so you could take your brand new robot body and get yourself killed. Like, fuck you, Hugo. I was so mad at that guy at the end. I'm like,
he had to make it all about him because this movie is all about him.
Well, see, I mean, if the movie was about him, if the movie was about Hugo and we saw all the steps between his stupid things, then maybe like a little bit. But that's the weird thing is like, in the anime and whatnot, it's like Alita shows up and she doesn't know anything, so she like gets this insight into like Ito the doctor and Hugo the lower class guy. Like, he's supposed to be our window into the everyman. He's a world building device that we plug into through this like Pinocchio vision. He's not like, he is a love interest and he is doing his like weird stealing stuff, and he does get like framed for murder, and Alita does say like she loves him. But it's because the anime's focus is much more like Alita is a MacGuffin that allows all these other people to live out their stories. Here, if she's the center of it, it feels really weird to put all of her wants and hopes on hold and have her latch on to this very obviously dumb scam that he's gotten himself involved in. And then like to literally pull out her heart. Like, I get where like the soon as you have like a cyborg with a super powerful heart, James Cameron's little like wheel of Vogler storytelling device pops up and he's like, she could offer him his heart. Like, I get it.
And
I
then
get
the movie will be about his decision.
Exactly. It's just,
I'm so fucking mad at this.
the story is structured as a cool way, like, there's a magical character who allows us to see parts of this future world that, you know, she plays motorball so we could see, like, the violent sports. She becomes a bounty hunter so we could see, like, how police have been left out, you know. She was, like, this super warrior so we could see how the world got this way. The movie doesn't use any of those things. It tries to build the narrative around this girl who's nothing. She's a sieve. And even worse, she's like a CGI sieve, which makes her even harder to like anchor to sometimes. I don't know. It's weird. I kept waiting for, the character to do animate face faults. Because when I get used to looking at a character, like face faults is when anime characters suddenly pull like a really major expression that doesn't look like them at all to express some sort of like inner turmoil. So if someone's angry, their eyes will become like X's and like steam lines will come out of their ears only for like a few frames. But it's a shorthand of a way to communicate emotion. This, because it doesn't have that, it tries to like westernize it. And that's how you get fucking cutting a tear with your katana blade.
So funny.
It's like it tosses out everything that's good about Alita as a story set in
or the weird
like,
sexy
world.
Chocolate eating.
Oh god,
remember Panzerkunst?
Panzerkunst.
Panzerkunst.
The one thing I will say, and this is, you know, so my colleague Vanity Fair Richard Lawson saw this and he actually quite liked it. And it was like one of those things where I had already been so vocally against it that he like got out of the movie and like sent me an I'm sorry text. I'm sorry. I really liked it.
I'm sorry. I liked that movie.
I was like, okay. And then he was like, oh no, but it's based on an anime or a manga. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, oh, well, fuck. And I was like, why? And he's like, well, whitewashing. And so I just want to say that, like, if you look at the character that Christoph Waltz plays or the character that Jennifer Connelly plays, like, those are Aryan looking characters in the original, story, or, you know, in the anime is, you know, they're like blonde and round eyed and stuff like that. So, like,
I think it's established later on in the manga that, the trash city or whatever is actually over Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah, there's no, like, there's maybe some Latino washing going on, but there's no, as far as I know, no whitewashing going on. So, and that's why you maybe have not heard of that, people being mad about that, because, I don't think that that's
it's
an
it's
issue.
Not that real.
All right.
I think if anybody watched the original anime and then watched this movie, they'd be like, of course, this is how the movie would have turned out. I just, you know, I assumed that they would do something to make it more palatable to people, and they did not.
Also, I get, having seen To All the Boys I Loved Before, I get mad now every time I see something Lena Condor as, like, a background character, you know, as she is in the X-Men as well, because you're just sort of like, and this was, like, obviously made before she broke out in that, but you're like, oh, you have this enormously charismatic person, and you just shove them in the background to, like,
put Michael Jordan on the bench.
ask questions or something. I don't know. Anyway. So, all right, Neil, how are you going to fix this movie?
Well, I wanted to say nice things because I didn't have a lot of nice things to say about it. But I think that I did come up with a couple of different versions of this movie that I would watch, like if it was done a little bit differently, which I will say as a tangent, is my least favorite form of film criticism, which is make up the movie that you'd like to see. But I'm going to do it anyway, because this movie kind of deserves it. One, I would watch the version of this movie, which is basically Gladiator, where there's no love interest. We get rid of the boyfriend. It's just about the dad who lost the daughter, and he finds this robot, and she doesn't have to do any sexy stuff. She can just fight her way out of the working class to become a champion of the people and defeat the technocracy that is ruling over her and take it down. You could just call it Alita 2 or something very not PC.
Too Furious. Yeah.
I would also watch the version of this movie, like I said before, that is just her Jessica Jones style, taking out, bounty hunting all the people who kill women, which this movie, like, for like 10 seconds was like, that's where we're going. And I was like, yeah. And then it wasn't there. I should have known. I would also watch the version of this, which is like a weird backdoor sequel to The Expanse, where it's about the war between Mars and Earth that looks super fucking cool in those flashbacks, like where it's like Michelle Rodriguez and Rosa Salazar with big eyes trying to conquer Earth. Give me that fucking movie all day long. What I'm saying is stop trying to have sex with robots and make cool action movies again. Please. Robert Rodriguez, James Cameron, anyone else who's listening, please.
Yeah, no romance plot. I think that'd be
you don't really have to have it.
Yeah.
She doesn't, it doesn't have to be about puberty.
No.
It could be about her as a warrior, discovering that she used to be a badass warrior. That's pretty fucking cool. I don't know how much to ascribe that. Like, is it because it is a story with a female lead that they felt like they had to do that? I don't like to ascribe motive to it, but it, like, a lot of this movie just reads really weird and it's hard to figure out where it comes from. It does make me want to go back and sort of watch the anime to see, like Dave said, like how much feels directly adapted, but there's just so much this movie reads in such a weird way that it's like, I don't know, guys. I don't know what you're trying to do here.
I think there are pieces of the anime, or if not in its entirety, on YouTube. If you especially want to check out the part that is adapted almost directly, where we learn Christoph Waltz has a giant rocket-powered hammer in the dark alleys of the future.
And that's, like, cool stuff. Like, if it would have just been this movie about this guy and this, like, them helping each other rebuild...
Oh yeah,
in a friendly father-daughter way. Cool.
The about 20-30 minutes into this movie, I was having a really good time and was like on its fucking page when he's like, "Yep, you thought I was this kindly old scientist. I'm a bounty hunter." And then he just like brings the head into the thing and he's like, "Yeah, you know, so this guy, I used to build parts and you killed my daughter, so now I'm a bounty hunter. I just never stopped. I like killing bad guys." And she's like, "I think I like killing bad guys." I was like, "All right, movie, you go. You be the professional with robots. I'm fine with that."
You go. Not Hugo. You go.
Not Hugo.
And then fucking young Robert Rodriguez shows up and tries to have sex with the robot. And that's my problem with this movie.
One last thing I liked.
Okay. If anyone's still listening.
And it wasn't Jackie Earle Haley doing whatever the fuck he's doing in this movie.
I didn't even know that was him until the credits. That's part of why I was watching the credits. I was like, who the fuck were these people?
Who are these people?
Who are the, like, I knew Ed Skrein, but like some of them.
Jeff Fahey. I was pretty here for Jeff Fahey and his robot dogs. So I would.
Oh yeah.
I would watch a movie about the ragtag, bounty hunter bar and like all of those people. I would have watched that.
Sure.
And their different robot parts and what they do.
Yeah, I mean, there's part of this movie where it's just like it's like a weird like futuristic biker movie.
Yeah, but it's super weird to have like 9 antagonists for her. Like Jennifer Connelly's out to get her, Marshall Lee's out to get her, Ed Skrein's out to get her, Ed Norton's out to get her. Like who's She's got Christoph Waltz and eventually Jennifer Connelly for a brief second on her side. Like, and then Hugo and his friends are kind of out to get her in their own weird way. I mean, it's just like, it's stupid. That whole hate crime against like robots that Hugo and his friends do. Like, it was so, and then there was like, I'm sorry. It's the last thing I'll say. Wasn't there like a weird reveal? Was it Mahershala Ali? I forget who was like paying him, but he like takes off his like, they pay him and he takes off his thing and it's Hugo and you're like, yeah, I knew it was Hugo this whole time. This isn't a reveal. What are you doing? What is this movie? I hate it.
Also, if you're Mahershala Ali, never again should you play a character through which a different character has to speak.
No. He's doing a great job.
I don't know. It was a dignity thing. Like, I was watching this going, you're so much better than this, bud.
Well, I was watching this going,
you could do something like this in a really smart movie, but
yeah. He signed he must have signed on for this years ago. Before this is him in like still in Hunger Games mode where he's
this
like
was filmed,
I'll take whenever.
This was filmed here in Austin, Texas. Mm-hmm. in October 2016 through February of 2017. Wow. That explains a little bit.
Yeah.
What a tumultuous time to make any kind of movie.
So here's a question for Ed Norton, fan of the craft. Did Ed Norton go in and tell Mahershala Ali how he was going to play that thing, or did Ed Norton get given a character he
has to
play for
the sequel? Only behind the scenes thing I want to see is the screen is like the script read where it's Mahershala and Ed Norton doing how we're going to speak through each other.
Yeah, are we going to do? Am I just going to let him do this and then have to play that character?
Should we do big arms? Are you going to do big arms? I was going to do big arms.
How are you
going to do
eyebrows? What's your eyebrow plan? I will say this, though. You're right. Mahershala does nail it. Ed Norton, when Ed Norton finally reveals his full self there at the end, you could tell that he knows what kind of movie he's in.
Yeah, and I think Jennifer Connelly knows what movie she's in.
Jennifer Connelly sure did. Yeah. I think Christoph Waltz, that's a good role for him as like a very serious person and a very earnest actor.
Diana and I called him Nazi Dad. We thought he was like a really good Nazi dad. So nothing good about Nazis, to be clear. It's just Waltz has
he's a German dad.
He's got that perma air of Inglourious Bastards about him. So
That's true. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. It's wild. There are things to like about this movie. It's just you gotta get through so much garbage to get there. I don't know why any of it had to happen.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to see how it does internationally and see if we're gonna get that.
But
Alita
I will
2.
Watch Terminator Rollerball sequel. I guess.
To Lita.
Terminator Rollerball sequel. Will that be different than the Terminator sequel?
Probably.
The Mackenzie Davis Terminator sequel?
I mean, it's clear that James Cameron has wanted to make Rollerball again for a while. So this is Rollerball with some Terminators.
Well, I guess if
and some
he
weird
had
sexual
to get to
politics.
Rollerball, I'd rather him get to Rollerball through Robert Rodriguez than through Paul W.S. Anderson. So
that's probably
good
for
job.
The best, yeah.
Good job, James. You keep working on those other four Avatar movies. We'll see them someday. All right. I think that's going to wrap it up for Alita Battle Angel.
Yeah, we're going to have to mercifully end this one.
Yeah. And until next week, where can people find your work on the internet? Probably about Oscars and not Alita.
Oh, wait. We
got to
say what we're talking
Rons.
About next week.
Oh, yeah. What are we talking about next week?
Dave, Neil? I can't let you forget because I came up with a fun name for it and everything.
Oh, wow.
Next week's episode is called the Oscars Bet Emotional Fallout episode, in which we will explore our feelings following the Oscars. I am, based on the math that we did today, I am planning despair as my emotion.
I think.
So we'll see.
Here's what I think is true. Dave is not going to lose. That's what I think is true. Whether or not Dave and I tie, or Neil and Dave tie, remains to be seen. But I think
interesting.
Dave is in a pretty good place.
That's a great tease. I like it.
The point is this is just all foreshadowing for next January when you shave your beard when we learn that Ray's parents didn't mean it.
I thought we weren't going to talk
Who even
about
knows
that?
If we're all going to make it to next January, Dave?
Anyway, the first of many despair casts coming from Storm of Spoilers next week as we comb through the wreckage of the Academy Awards. It's going to be a crazy night. And the next week's episode will, I'm sure, be a lot of fun. Someone's going to be despairing for sure. At least one person. Mm-hmm. Maybe two people. Maybe a whole bunch of people because Green Book wins. So who knows? All right, Joanna, where can people find more of your work until we're back on the airwaves?
I will be writing about the Oscars over on VanityFair.com. I'm seeing Captain Marvel this week, so we'll see if I don't. Probably can't say anything about that, but that's the thing that's happening to me.
I know the social media embargo is up soon, I heard. Be able to tweet.
Have you seen it?
No.
I thought no one's seen it. Have people seen
people
it?
Tell me about embargoes.
Okay. Anyway.
I don't know.
Yeah. So Oscars, Captain Marvel, Neil and I will be hanging out in Austin soon. It's all happening.
Hell yeah.
How about you, Dave?
I'm Dave. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can find my other podcast, Fighting in the War Room, at fightingthewarroom.com. My March will be spent working on a bunch of things because Java's going on a long, like, 20-day vacation. So, bachelor pad, ho.
Whoa.
Neil, where can people find your stuff?
Guys, you can get me over at filmschoolrejects.com, where I am currently slogging through actually writing an article that I have had a lot of fun researching. That'll be fun. It's about the Oscars. We are also this weekend on Film School Rejects going to be fixing the Oscars with a series of articles. So look forward to that one. Follow me on Twitter at Rejects. And I guess I should say don't fall down. This is where we put that, right?
Yep. You can make a plan, carve it into stone, like a feather falling, it is still unknown, until the clock speaks up, says it's time to go. You can choose the high or the lower road, you might clench your fist.